WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. My guest is former New York City Fire Commissioner Thomas Van Essen. He led the fire department in its response to the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center on September 11th and oversaw the department's rescue and recovery efforts at Ground Zero. In the process of helping to save more than 25,000 lives, 343 firefighters died. While the firefighters have been celebrated as heroes since that day, the New York City Fire Department has been criticized for its communication and coordination problems on 9/11. After 31 years as a firefighter, including 3 years as president of the Firefighters Union, Thomas Van Essen retired from his post as commissioner in December. He's written a memoir of his time with the fire department. It's called Strong of Heart. We spoke yesterday about his experience of September 11th. Where were you when the first tower collapsed?
I had just left the command post across the street where everybody had set up and was walking up Church Street, and I thought part of the building collapsed. The amount of dust and debris that just blew over us was like being in an earthquake or a volcano or something. Just really got dark. It just ducked into a building, let that wave of dirt and dust and concrete blow over us. And when we came out, I thought for sure that part of it had fallen. I still didn't believe that the whole building would fall.
You know, firefighters put out fires. I mean, that's always the end in sight. But after the second tower fell, was there a point in which you knew this is not going to happen? We're not going to put this. This is no longer just a fire. And what did the new objective become?
Well, we knew way before either tower fell that we weren't going to put the fire out, that our mission was strictly to get up as fast and as far as we could, get as many people out, and we did. We got out more than 20,000 people. I mean, from different levels, from 7 floors underground to 70 floors above ground, we really did assist thousands and thousands of people, which is something that everybody has to remember, that those lives weren't in vain, that they helped rescue and save thousands of people.
How did September 11th end for you that day? Where were you at the end of the day? When did your day end?
Well, it didn't end, I guess, maybe till about 3 o'clock the next morning. We had meetings all day. We had gone back down to the site in between the meetings. I had been down there 2 or 3 times. And then after the last meeting, late at night, I went down there and I was walking around. And, you know, it was just horrible.
What did you see? What did it look like?
It was, you know, a mass of humanity trying in ways that they just couldn't do what they wanted to do. The firefighters and the volunteers just tried to do superhuman things and lift things and lift pieces of debris and steel and crawl into areas where they thought maybe somebody might be trapped, crawling into deep dark caverns and tunnels, that taking enormous risks. And we were trying to get enough lights, and that the overpass had fallen. We couldn't really get heavy equipment in. Welders and steel workers are coming from everywhere and just offering to help. And no questions asked. The support from everybody was really something to see, and it just kept coming.
During the day, did you get confirmation by name of individuals that you knew that had died?
Yes, we started to get confirmation about individual names, and you know, the confirmed that they were dead early in the afternoon.
And who close to you?
The first one we got was Father Judge, who was one of our chaplains, who was just a great guy, and we had become very close. He baptized my granddaughter. He was set to baptize my second granddaughter. My first grandson, my son named after him, Mason Judge. He was just a wonderful guy. and everybody loved him. And he was the first person that they carried out. He was in the North Tower, actually. And it just began the process of name after name after name after name. It just kept coming, you know, for days. And, you know, just horrible.
At that first press conference that was held after September 11th, you were standing next to the mayor, and you were asked the question, can you talk about the loss to the department? And you gave a really very eloquent and heartfelt answer. Can you give us an idea what was going through your mind then?
Well, I guess I was three-quarters numb at that point, just thinking about how many people were going to be lost, you know, just the idea that we had no real confirmation of the total numbers, so we were estimating it. We said over 200, and I thought it would be closer to 400, thinking about how many people were in there, but I was really hoping that a lot of people would be found alive that day and the next day and, you know, for a couple of days as we went forward. But then we had meetings with collapse experts that night and the next night, and they told us you're not going to find anybody alive because of that weight going from 1,340 feet to 80 feet of rubble. They said the weight and the pressure would be just too much and that nobody would survive, and they were right. They were wrong about us finding, you know, full bodies. We did. We found reasonably complete torsos way into it, probably because of bunker gear, but not with the civilians that didn't have that protection, and not that many people. But that afternoon, all I could think of was, you know, normally when we lose one firefighter, or two, or three, it's like a worst nightmare. We had just had Father's Day, which is our worst nightmare. Three guys dying, you know, and I thought, like, wow, how could God do this to us? You know, only a couple of months to go in the administration. I thought, wow, really gave us a good smack on the way out. And not having any conception of what was going to happen in September, and that the losses would be really too many to even comprehend.
Father's Day was a devastating fire in which you lost three of your men.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah, I should have explained that. There was an explosion in a hardware store, and we lost three firefighters.
Now, one of your jobs as commissioner in the best of times is and the worst is to console the families of the fallen. And in the case of September 11th, you're also consoling the firefighters who survived and were looking for their men. Was that something that always came naturally to you, or was it the part of the job that you felt was the hardest or perhaps you never mastered?
I don't know if anybody ever masters it. If they do, I salute them. I found it to be the hardest part, the most painful part, and the part you just you hope never happen. But this tragedy was overwhelming in that respect because you couldn't do what you normally did. At Father's Day, I had gotten close to those three ladies, had gone to lunch with them and spent the whole day with them, had gone to all the wakes a couple of nights and gone to the funerals and had conversations with them and just tried in a small way to make their life just, you know, give them a little less pain, you know, a little more help to them. So that was what we did, myself, and I had a team of people who very compassionate and really cared about families.
Among them, I imagine, Father Michael Judge.
Father Judge was the leader of that team. He was just phenomenal as far as giving people a minute of... He seemed to suck their pain in, you know, to take it away from them and to take it himself. And he was much better at that than I was. I would always be standing there. I would never, you know, not do it, but I always didn't think I was good at it because I it was very emotional for me. I always felt as if these guys were my kids or my brothers, and I always felt that it was a personal loss for me, and dealing with their mothers or wives or their kids was just horrible. So that was always the worst, absolute, no question about it, part of the job. But when September 11th hit, we weren't able to do that. In addition to the fact that it happened and that you wanted to do that, you couldn't. There was just too many.
Thomas von Essen is my guest. He's the former fire commissioner of New York City. He headed the department during the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center and the months afterwards. His memoir of his experiences with the New York Fire Department is Strong of Heart. We'll continue our conversation after this break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is former New York City Fire Commissioner Thomas von Essen. He led the department throughout the World Trade Center attack and much of the rescue and recovery efforts. He has a new memoir about that time and his life as a firefighter. It's called Strong of Heart. I'd like to talk about the recovery effort. The firefighters and the police and everyone involved evidenced amazing courage and morale at the site, but I'm sure it's inevitable that morale must have had lapses or flagged at different points. What conflicts did the firefighters face during the recovery? What did you find challenging about that phase of the operation?
Immediately, they were upset because we were holding them back. The chiefs, that those first 5-6 hours, first of all, we lost our senior command, so now we had some chiefs came in from home and took charge. They had to get a sense of what was necessary. And we had some excellent chiefs that stepped up at that time and did that, Chief Carruthers and Chief Fellini, people who had been at home and came in and fortunately had their heads on straight and were able to function. So it was difficult, but they did it. But a lot of the firefighters, not understanding the whole picture, would be upset because, you know, we've got to get in there. The brothers are trapped. We've got to get in there. Well, the chiefs at the scene would say that we have to get control. That building right there is still burning. It's going to collapse. So we had to wait until that collapse of other buildings fell so we could ascertain the danger to putting additional people, live people, in harm's way in an area that chances were slim we were going to rescue people, but we wanted to make those efforts. So that you have your first day. And then that night and the second day, enormous numbers of people came from everywhere. People that meant well. Volunteers that went from 16 to 80. And you weren't sure of their ability. You weren't sure if they had any clue what they were doing. You weren't sure if they had any skills, if they were going to get hurt. So you had to worry about that. You saw teams started coming in, urban search and rescue teams. They were phenomenal. The skill level, the ability to just give them a job and not worry about them anymore was something that the chiefs in charge really appreciated. So that was a good thing. Then you had people come from other departments, Chicago, Boston, Phoenix, people who really knew their stuff, so you could give them assignments. Now you'd give them a job, and then you'd have some of our guys upset because why would you give a job to the USAW team when such and such a truck from Staten Island could do it? Well, the chiefs had reasons for doing different things. So there were all of those morale issues and issues of then people being tired, people want to work. They don't want to go home, but people only can work so long, and they become a hazard. You have to worry about them hurting themselves. You have to worry about them hurting somebody else. You have to worry about them not being effective because they are so tired and they've lost their strength. So they had all those issues, the logistical issues, that we were outside of the area trying to figure out solutions, getting people there, feeding them, getting them equipment. We lost all of our equipment in the tragedy. Everybody had... Every piece of equipment that was on the trucks was all destroyed. So we had to get all new equipment. We needed tools, hand tools, power tools. They needed cutting tools. The welders came in. The steel workers came in. The iron workers, concrete people, heavy equipment, bulldozers. It just went on and on and on. It was a monumental project, and it was everybody did a great job. They really did. No matter what area you talk to, even... Everybody put any problems they had, they put them aside and just went to work. But morale, you know, and issues and stress started to hit after a couple of days. Now you realize, well, I'm not going to rescue my friend. He's going to be dead when I find him. a few more days go by, and now you're thinking you might not even find your friend. Then you pull out a body that's totally destroyed, and you say, if I find my friend, I might not be able to even recognize him. And then you start dealing with the families, and the families are concerned that if you find my husband or my son, what did you find? So it just, that's very stressful. And that took a lot out of people, and that made people very edgy. And then, you know, how should we work? 24 hours on, 12 hours on, 24 hours off. It just, it was a lot of stuff.
The fire department has come under scrutiny and at times attack since September 11th for alleged failures in the department's response. A draft report by an independent consultant has targeted a number of problems in the fire department's response on that day, and perhaps first among them were radio communication problems. Could you help us understand that? I read in the report that the fire department was using 10 or 15-year-old radios and that the department suffered a collapse of communications far exceeding any other agency on that day.
Well, the radio is pretty complicated, but we'll start off by saying that there were no breakdowns in the fire department's response that day. And the report is what I guess most management reports do, find things to select and criticize. They criticize the discipline of the firefighters, and I say to you that if we listened to their report, we would be giving people disciplinary charges for running up 40 flights of stairs and saving somebody's mother. So these were heroic acts, and if the department thinks they should change policies, that's okay, change the policies, but they should absolutely stay away from criticizing heroism of people that are on the scene that day. The radios are a different issue. The radios are, it has not been honestly reported since day one. We had issues with new radios. They're right, those radios are in place are 10 years old, which isn't unusual. There's probably radios 15 and 20 years old being used throughout the country. What you don't hear anybody say is no one stands up in front of a camera and says, I have a better radio. I have a radio that works in high-rise sub-basements. I have a radio that will transmit from the first floor of the Trade Center to the 50th floor of the Trade Center. No radios work without repeaters. It's obvious now that the repeater was working that day, that there was communication, that many people did have radio contact. There is a question, I think, and I think it's valid, that many people weren't able to communicate. Why some people weren't on that channel that was being going through the repeater, which is like a booster. It takes a signal and increases it, so it allows you to get up to the 50th or 60th floor. And the normal radio is probably going to work 10, 20 floors, depending on where and the amount of steel and everything else. So there's, you know, if people want to really look at the radios, they should look at it. They should bring people in. They should sit down and they should really investigate the radio situation. There's an awful lot of misinformation and dishonesty being going on with it, I think.
Do you have recommendations for how better to train fire department firefighters for this kind of multiple phase emergency situation?
Well, I don't know what else we could have done. We've been training more than FDNY has in the last 20 years. We've trained more in the last 5 years. Training is important. You've got to keep it up. There's new things to learn. They should be thinking about anthrax and biological terrorism. But they did a great job in that building that day. They know what to do when they get into these buildings. They know how to handle it. There was breakdowns in the staging and breakdowns in some of the coordination amongst the troops themselves. That happens. This was the worst tragedy that ever hit our nation. I mean, do you think to sit down now and criticize some breakdowns in that effort without always constantly reinforcing the unbelievable heroism of people running up 50 flights of stairs, totally exhausted to help people who might be trapped in a stairwell. I think it's kind of sad, and people should be ashamed of themselves and with some of the criticism. The radio stuff, fine. Have an investigation and put people under oath and find out what happened. I asked for an investigation, an independent investigation, because I didn't think that the fire department could really honestly evaluate itself. They don't have accountability at the highest levels of the uniform management. I asked for an independent investigation last October. While I was there, I think it's important to investigate, not to even find fault and find blame, but to find out what happened so you can prevent it from happening again.
Thomas Van Essen, I want to thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thomas Van Essen is New York City's former fire commissioner. His new memoir is Strong of Heart. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.